Keys Hacker.
Talk about a fried egg. I lasted about 5 minutes out there. I said, to heck with this. I'll do this in the morning. And I don't have any inside information. The lady that did it, she got in there. She made it happen.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
And I do enjoy drinking cold beer at ballparks. So if that makes me a baseball fan, then I'm a diehard baseball fan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Monday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker Ryan Green with you. Glad you are with us as we have reached draft week here in the city of Jacksonville and all throughout the National Football League. 72 hours from right now, Roger Goodell will walk across that stage in Detroit and officially put the Chicago Bears on the clock. Of course, the Jaguars, with 8 picks as it stands right now, they will pick number 17 overall on Thursday night. Which direction will they go? Well, that's funny you ask, because I think there are 3 clear positions where the Jaguars could go on Thursday night, and there's one caveat. So over the next 3 nights, we'll go one position tonight, one position tomorrow, one position on Wednesday. I'll give you my opinion, the pros and the cons. And then on Wednesday, I'll also give you that caveat, which if you've been listening to this program for the last couple of weeks, you probably already know. But it is a great time of year. Unfortunately, I'm going to watch my Orlando Magic just get beat to death tonight. So if I feel like I'm in a somber mood or I sound a little somber, it's because Cleveland is teaching Orlando all about NBA playoff basketball. Young team, they won 47 games this year. It's hard to really be upset. They'll learn from this, but my goodness, they don't even look like they belong on the same floor with Cleveland right now. They lost by 14 in game one. The Magic are down 15 right now. They just can't shoot. They got a lot of money in free agency. They're going to have to go find a shooter or two because they just cannot shoot. Jalen Suggs, if you missed it, also got injured tonight. So it has not been good for the Orlando Magic, no question about that, but we'll keep you updated. But Cleveland's up 15 right now in the second quarter. Guest lineup tonight looks like this. Coming up in less than 20 minutes, Ian Cummings of Pro Football Network. He is their main draft guy over at PFN. Always enjoy talking with Ian, and I'm going to flat out ask him the difference between Terrion Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell. I'm going to ask him the difference between Brian Thomas and A.D. Mitchell. I'm going to ask him about offensive line. I'm going to ask about defensive line. We're really going to dive into what Ian Cummings, so this is all he does. This is his job, 365 at Pro Football Network, what he would do if he was in the Jaguars' shoes, and what he believes Trent Baalke will do on Thursday night at pick 17. So Ian Cummings coming up in less than 20 minutes. Also Brian Sexton of Jaguars.com. Brian's going to join us twice this week. Tonight for a preview, and then Wednesday night we're going to have him because he's going to be up in Detroit getting things ready with Jaguars.com for the NFL draft. So we'll have Brian Sexton on twice beginning tonight at about 9 o'clock. But we're glad you're with us. I was down in Tampa last week, at the end of last week, for Kenny Chesney. Certainly enjoyed myself. Denmark, I'll be honest, I hit the Seminole Hard Rock as well.
Ooh, how was it?
Well, it was fun at the beginning.
How much you win?
It got a little worse towards the middle, and at the end, I was happy that I had some self-control.
All right, that's good.
Just say that. But it was a good learning experience out there. But if you've never been to the Seminole Hard Rock in Tampa, man, two thumbs way, way up. Cigar bar right in the middle of the establishment, the Hard Rock Cafe restaurant right there. And I mean, you would not know you weren't in Las Vegas. I mean, it looks like a Vegas casino. It is gorgeous at the Seminole Hard Rock down in Tampa. So enjoyed that. And then Raymond James Stadium on Saturday for Kenny Chesney. I got a funny story about that I'll share with you later on here on Hacker After Dark. But as we do every night here on HAD, we do kick it off with a big deal of the night. And Dylan Denmark, let's do that right now.
time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
72 hours away from the NFL draft. And there are three positions that I believe the Jaguars will target in round one. There's also a caveat to that, but I'll get to that in a moment. The three positions are corner, wide receiver, and offensive tackle. Those are the three. And we're going to do individual breakdowns on each, beginning with corner tonight. My caveat is edge rusher, particularly if a guy like Jared Verse is there. I'll get more into that probably on Wednesday evening. But I want to begin with what I think is probably the most likely. If I was a betting man, if I was in Vegas, or if I was down at the Seminole Hard Rock placing wagers on what the Jaguars were going to do on Thursday night at pick 17, I would put the betting odds on corner because I feel there's a pressing need there, and I think Trent Baalke said as much last week at that press conference, at that pre-draft media luncheon. Some of the things he said made me think and made others think that corner would definitely be in play at 17. So let's talk about corner a little bit. There's two names that we've heard for the last few months. Arian Arnold of Alabama and Quinyon Mitchell of Toledo. And I'm going to ask Ian Cummings of Pro Football Network to do a compare and contrast on those two guys in just a moment. What will the Jaguars do if both are there at 17? And the fascinating thing about Mitchell versus Arnold at corner for the Jaguars in particular is you could ask 10 draft analysts, which I have, and then some, and five will tell you one guy and five will tell you the other. You know that old saying, it's six in one hand, half a dozen in the other? That's what it appears to be between Arian Arnold of Alabama and Quinyon Mitchell of Toledo. Some guys really like Mitchell over Arnold. Some guys really like Arnold over Mitchell, and there's not a big gap either way. So what will the Jaguars do? Well, I've heard from enough people that both picks, both corners would be good at 17, good selections. But I've heard from enough people at this point that feel Quinyon Mitchell may fit Ryan Nielsen's scheme a little better than Arnold does. Now, again, I am not the most analytics guy. I'm not a guy that's watched hours of film on Quinyon Mitchell and Arian Arnold. I know enough to speak, I think, intelligently about them, and that's why I have all these draft guys on and have had them on for the last few months. Again, not a lot of separation between the two, but the vibe I've gotten is if they're both there, Mitchell may fit Ryan Nielsen's scheme a little better. Well, if one of them's there, well, then it's a no-brainer if you're going corner. If Arian Arnold's gone and Quinyon Mitchell's there, well, okay, you'll probably take in Mitchell and vice versa. Now, there are teams with cornerback needs that are in front of you, including your division rival, the Indianapolis Colts, who pick at 15. So is corner, is Mitchell or Arnold, is there value enough for Jacksonville to move up if they feel they need to? It's an interesting question. Another interesting question is what if both guys are gone at pick 17? Is Cooper DeJean of Iowa, is Kool-Aid McKinstry of Alabama, is Nate Wiggins of Clemson, the third, fourth, and fifth corners after Arnold and Mitchell, in whatever order you want to put them in, are those guys worth the 17th pick in the draft? Or if you find a trading partner, could you move back to the mid-20s, still get one of those guys, and acquire some more draft capital? Remember, that's what Trent Baalke did last year. Moved back twice, picked up a handful of picks, and still got Anton Harrison at pick 27. I think if you have the same grade on Nate Wiggins, Cooper DeJean, and Kool-Aid McKinstry, you could move back. Of course, it takes two to tango, right? You can want to move back, and you can say you're going to move back, but you need a trade partner. You need a dance partner. who's going to move up, and how far do you want to move back? So there are a lot of questions about corner. And keep in mind, the Jaguars have 8 picks. They're going to draft at minimum 1, but to me, probably 2 corners. I think the over-under on corners for the Jaguars in this draft is 1.5 if they keep their 8 picks. Because I would almost guarantee they're going to draft 1, and I would think it's actually a pretty safe bet they're going to draft 2. So in talking about corners, if that's where the Jaguars need to go at 17 in round 1 on Thursday night, and I believe that is the betting favorite right now, that they will go corner, Quinyon Mitchell is probably my guy, just because I've heard from enough people that he fits Ryan Nielsen's scheme better than Terrion Arnold. Although I've heard from as many people that love Arnold and think he'd be a valuable pick at 17. If one of those guys is gone, it makes your job a lot easier. If both of them are there, I'm going to go Quinyon Mitchell if I'm going corner. And again, if both are gone, then you have to ask yourself, Cooper DeJean of Iowa, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Alabama, Nate Wiggins, Clemson. Is one of those guys worth 17? Or do you try to trade back? And if you can't trade back and you're locked into 17, do you feel comfortable with taking the 3rd, 4th, or 5th corner on most boards in this year's draft? Corner is a fascinating position because the Jaguars have a need. Tyson Campbell, great. Ronald Darby, probably a stopgap. Darnell Savage, we really don't know. He's been a safety a majority of his career. After that, it's Buster Brown and Gregory Jr. No question the Jaguars have a need at corner. No question the Jaguars, to me, will address that need at corner. The big question to me is, will it be at pick 17 on Thursday night? Or will it be something they address Friday or certainly early on Saturday? Again, I don't think you get past round 3 without taking a corner, but do you take one in round number 1? Probably depends a lot on how the board falls when the Jaguars are on the clock with the 17th selection. 641-1010 is your phone number on the phone lines and on the text line. Designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Again, Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network. Their lead draft analyst is less than 10 minutes away. Denmark, we will focus more on wide receivers and offensive tackles later in the week. When it comes to corner, do you agree that probably is the betting favorite of where the Jaguars are going to go? And do you have a preference, Arnold or Mitchell at 17?
No, I really don't care. Arnold probably just slightly above Kool-Aid, but and then Mitchell's the number 1 guy, but yeah, corner probably, if I had a bet, $100 bill, that's who the Jags are going to go in the first round, if I had a bet.
That's the vibe I got coming out of the Trent Baalke presser last week. Again, he didn't flat out come out and say that, right? That's just what I took away, because he talked about the one comment that really got me, and I was talking to Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 about this, the one comment that got me, and again, smokescreen season, right? I mean, this could mean anything. But he said something along the lines Baalke did of, if you take 32 NFL teams, they might have the corners ranked all differently. It was something like that, and it's like, okay, maybe Mitchell and Arnold aren't their top 2 guys. To say that 32 teams could all have a corner board ranked differently on their draft board in their war room, to me, interprets that they see a lot of value at corner, maybe not outside, or just not even outside the first 2. Maybe DeJean, McKinstry, Nate Wiggins is a guy that people are still talking about. In fact, I saw Chris Sims. I got a kick out of this. Chris Sims earlier today did his mock draft, had the Jaguars going Nate Wiggins at 17 with Adunze from Washington still on the board going 18 to Cincinnati.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Let me tell you something here in Duval County, Chris Sims. If your mock draft is correct and next or on this Thursday in 72 hours, if Adunze is on the board at 17 and the Jaguars go Nate Wiggins, there will be an uprising at EverBank Stadium. That draft party will be very interesting very quick if that happens. No way on planet Earth Odunze is going to fall that far. And if he does, by a sheer miracle, he's not getting by the Jaguars at 17. I just cannot imagine a scenario like that. What does Ian Cummings think of Pro Football Network? Lead draft analyst there, PFN365.com. I'm going to ask him about corner. We're going to talk wide receiver. We're going to talk offensive tackle. And, yeah, we're going to talk about my guy, Jared Verse. Is there any realistic chance that Jared Verse falls to Jacksonville at 17? Because you know, if Jared Verse is there at 17, I am sprinting to that podium. I am turning in that card because the idea of Jared Verse, Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, and Eric Armstead to me would absolutely be too good to pass up. We're going to talk to Ian Cummings about all of this. Also, Brian Sexton, Jaguars.com. He is coming up at the top of the 9 o'clock hour with Dylan Denmark. I'm the Hacker, Ryan Green. Jacksonville, we're glad you're with us. It's draft week, a Monday night edition of Hacker After Dark here in the city of Jacksonville. It's 1010XL and it's 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL at 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. And the week is finally here, and it doesn't seem like it took all that long to get here. It seems like the combine was not that long ago, and yet here we are. The NFL draft, Thursday night in Detroit. Right now the Jaguars have 8 picks overall, including the number 17 selection in round number 1. Let's talk about the Jags, their draft outlook, and also look at the AFC South a little bit as well with Ian Cummings of Pro Football Network. He does a terrific job covering the NFL draft for PFN, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Ian, how you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Excited to run the home stretch here. It's been a long time coming, but you mentioned it. The combine, it felt like it was just yesterday, and already we're right here on the doorstep. So a lot of potential outcomes in round one, and you know, teams like Jacksonville waiting in the middle of round one, they have a lot hinging on what happens in the top 10, right? So it's going to be an unpredictable one, but a very, very fun draft on the horizon right here.
Ian, for a guy like you, right, this is what you do 365 days a year. You are a draft guy, and you do a great job covering the draft. Are you relieved that the week is finally here? I mean, you've been studying these guys for probably the last 12 or so months.
Yeah, there is a little bit of a relief for sure. You know, you still have to see it through, and then, you know, you have to, you know, where every player goes, you have to discern the fit, right, and talk about that as well. So we're not out of the woods yet, and it's going to be fun to see where they go. But, you know, just a few days after this draft, right, we're going to be rolling to 2025, right? So it never truly ends. You're always trying to look ahead a little bit, but I'll definitely be setting aside some vacation time for sure. You got to decompress. You got to find that time. But there's relief. There's excitement. There's a lot of different emotions, and I imagine even more so for the players, right, going through the pre-draft process, a lot of balancing, right? You know, now you can get to your team and start to take the next step.
Ian Cummings of Pro Football Network. All right, Ian, when it comes to the Jaguars, all the talk down here, defensive back, wide receiver, those are the two most prevalent positions. Let's begin with defensive back. Quinyon Mitchell, Terrion Arnold, let's start there. Any chance that either one or even both of those guys are available at 17?
I think there's a chance for sure. I look at Quinyon Mitchell, could be a pick for the Colts at 15, but at the same time, you've got other players that could take precedence as well. I think it really depends on how the board plays out, because you got 4 quarterbacks right away, right? You know, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Drake May, JJ McCarthy. You've got probably at least 3 receivers that go before the Jaguars with that big 3, a few offensive linemen as well. So, you know, looking at the talent that's on the board and a few edge guys too, I think it's very, very, it's at least likely that one of them will be there at 17. Both of them, that may be a little unpredictable. I think that's a little less likely, but I do think one could be there. And it depends on scheme fit. Again, Terrion Arnold is not quite as fast as Mitchell, but he's fluid. He's very physical in support. He's very versatile, really technically sound, great ball skills. And then you got Quinyon Mitchell, who's that ball hawk with that elite closing speed, click and close ability, and obviously the ability to play the ball at the catch point. So I think one of them could be available there. I think Quinyon Mitchell would probably be a slightly better scheme fit just with the recovery speed and his ability to smother backs with his willing physicality. But Terrion Arnold would also be a good fit as well. So to me, they're pretty closely rated. I don't see a wrong decision for either of them.
And I was going to ask you that next. Hypothetically, if both guys are there, we don't expect that, but let's just humor me here. You would go Mitchell over Arnold if you were the Jaguars?
I would probably go Arnold over Mitchell just because Arnold has a slightly higher grade on my board. I think Mitchell definitely has a superior recovery speed, but Terrion Arnold is still a very good fit. I think Ryan Nielsen, you look at, you know, how his scheme is derived, a lot of press man looks, right? You know, that he wants to dictate route depth at the line. I think Mitchell can do that. I think Arnold is a little bit more well-versed in doing that right now. I think Mitchell, you know, has more immediate utility as an off-man zone guy, but he can play press man, as he showed at the Senior Bowl. The appeal with him for the Jaguars is, again, that recovery speed, where he can really limit vertical separation, and then he can click and close. He's got great recovery ability when he loses a step. So you're kind of hinging on that to help him withstand adversity early on at the NFL level. But Terrion Arnold is a top 10 player for me personally. They're both top 15 guys, but Terrion Arnold is in my top 10. He's a blue chip prospect at CB, in my opinion. And, you know, the gap is small, again, because Arnold is right there. But with Arnold, the way that he moves in the short ranges, right? The elastic movement, the ability to change direction and recalibrate his hips, and then, you know, click and close again, realign and just explode downhill. Again, he doesn't have that elite vertical speed, and his 4.5 40 yard dash put that on display. But I think within the short ranges where you're mirroring receivers, right, within their cylinder, he is so malleable. He's so quick to react. It's impressive. And then you listen to him interview. His mentality is very impressive, too. So I would lean Arnold. You know, I think they're both scheme fits, but Arnold, to me, has the superior fluidity, technical synergy right now. But if you want to go with upside, too, Quinyon Mitchell's recovery speed, his ball skills, very, very worth investing in round one.
Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network. Interesting. All right, so you would go Arnold. Now let's assume, Ian, both guys are gone. Final corner question. If both guys are gone, is your third-ranked corner, A, who is it, and B, would they be worth the 17th pick in the draft?
My third-ranked corner is Kool-Aid McKinstry. I know he's fallen under the radar a bit with Terrion Arnold's rise, but I'm still a big fan of what he has to offer as a prospect. I think Terrion Arnold is a little more fluid in man coverage. I think he's a little bit better at enforcing downhill. I think he's a little more physical. But Kool-Aid McKinstry, man, I think we forget how well-versed he is in both man and zone coverage. You know, he is very fluid. He can match guys in short ranges. He is really suffocating spatial usage, where he does not let you get an inch. He'll get right inside your frame, and he's willing to do it. But then he can transition upfield. He can limit vertical separation. Again, he doesn't have that elite vertical speed, but he has enough to contest on that phase. And then, you know, at the catch point as well, swarming ball skills, really good coordination. Again, I think Terrion Arnold probably a little bit more dynamic in the short ranges, but Kool-Aid is just so smooth and fluid and physical. I think, to me, he'd be worth the pick. He's still a top 20 guy for me. So again, I think it depends on who's on the board, right? You know, because if those two corners have gone, Terrion Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell, maybe there's a chance that Brian Thomas Jr. is still there, right? So again, every single player who comes off the board is kind of a give and take. There's a trade-off, right? Who else is still there? If Brian Thomas Jr. was still there, like, that's a pick that I'd be hard-pressed not to make if I'm Jacksonville. But at the same time, looking at Kool-Aid, I do think he gets slept on. He's a top 20 guy for me, and I would consider taking him.
Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network. All right, so if Kool-Aid McKinstry's there, the top two corners, Arnold and Mitchell, are gone, you would consider McKinstry at 17. Now let's go to wide receiver. The two names that we here in Jacksonville hear a lot and have heard a lot are A.D. Mitchell and Brian Thomas. Before we get to Brian Thomas, are there issues with A.D. Mitchell that are coming to the surface now at the week of the draft? I've read reports where maybe some teams don't even have him on their draft board.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly something to be aware of, that there are issues kind of, you know, on the surface. But the reports that we've been hearing is that it's tied to, you know, his diabetic, right? You know, sometimes if he's not at the correct blood sugar level, that's when his, you know, his, and I don't pretend to be a medical expert, but that can impact your, you know, your focus and drive and things like that. But my stance has been, if we know what the problem is, if that's all it is, you know, just, you know, diabetics and managing that, like, I'd like to think that an NFL team with their nutrition staff and support staff would know how to manage that, right? So if you can pinpoint it like that, that gives me a little bit of solace that you can control it, right? And as long as you can keep him at that level, he can play at a solid pace, right? Have some veterans in the room to help him along as well. So, you know, but if it's another thing, if it's beyond that, if it's more of an intrinsic effort issue, right? Which in college, I think, you know, people talk about the non-elite production at Texas, right? You know, for as good of a prospect as he is, why didn't he produce more? And there were times when his chemistry with Quinn Ewers, you could tell, was a little off, right? Working just 1 year together. But then at the same time, there were reps, both blocking and vertical tracking, where A.D. Mitchell could have given a little bit more effort down the stretch at the tail end of reps, and he didn't. He faded out sometimes. So, you know, it is something that you take into account. But if we know the root cause of it, right, if it's a diabetic issue, if it's a medical issue and not, you know, an intrinsic mental issue, then you can control it. I think you can properly, you know, mitigate those issues and potentially help him reach his ceiling. So it's something to be aware of. Is it something that would take him off my board? For me, I wouldn't say so, right? And then it becomes, is he worth the pick at 17? Which, again, he's a top 30 guy for me. So I definitely think there's an argument to make.
You mentioned Brian Thomas. I think if you take all the mock drafts, the thousands of them that we've seen over the last month, probably number one going to Jacksonville at 17 is probably Brian Thomas out of LSU. Your thoughts on the fit, Brian Thomas in Jacksonville? Do you feel he's worth the 17th pick? Your thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, for sure. And I think he's actually my 17th overall prospect on my big board. So I think he's the one exactly worth that pick. He's a fun player for sure. Christian Kirk, you have him as a movement Z who can move around and separate, right? Gabe Davis is mainly that vertical threat, right? You know, he's done good in the NFL so far, but, you know, isn't quite as versatile as Brian Thomas Jr., I think. So I think Brian Thomas Jr. would give you your wide receiver one who can play the slot or the boundary, right? We've seen his ability to separate on slot phase using that second level release work and that 4.33 speed. But then on the vertical plane too, I think he's very good at multitasking, keeping speed while tracking and attacking the football as well and boxing out DBs. So there's a lot of talent with him. And I think the unique part of his profile is that he's not just a traditional X who's going to stay on one side and only be confined to the boundary. You can move him around. You can get him the ball on jet sweeps and screens, and he's a pretty crafty rack threat too. So that combined lateral vertical ability and then the separation upside that comes from his flexibility for his size and bend through stems, there's a lot of potential there. And for me, Brian Thomas Jr. provides that potential, but also has immediate utility as a mix and match piece. So I think fits pretty well with the personnel the Jaguars have. And he fits Trevor Lawrence's preferences, going back to his days at Clemson. We know he always liked throwing to bigger bodied receivers who box out DBs and win those jump balls. So I think this plays into Lawrence's hand while also giving them a personnel fit. So I'm all for it if he's there. He's one of the top options for me as well.
A couple more for Ian Cummings of Pro Football Network. All right, Ian, and this entire lead up to the draft, I think you and I might have had a conversation about this a month ago, but truthfully, talking to so many guys around the business, people here in Jacksonville, what I've been told is that if you need a defensive back and a wide receiver, and those are your two biggest needs, it may be favorable to take a DB in round one because the wide receiver class is deeper and you could get a better prospect at wide receiver at 48. Then you could a defensive back. Do you agree with that?
I agree and I don't. It's interesting. I can see the argument for sure. This wide receiver class is very deep. And if you want a solid receiver, waiting until 48 is definitely a viable outcome. But at the same time, if you're really dead set on getting Brian Thomas Jr., right, that's the key. He's my wide receiver 4. He's 17th overall. My next receiver ranked is, I think, 26 or 27. So there is a little bit of a gap there. And I can see an outcome where if the Jaguars pass on a receiver at 17, there's a run on receivers. There's a very good chance that there will be a run on receivers from like 31 to 40, right, somewhere within that range. A lot of guys can go off the board, so that can thin out the class a little bit. But looking at Brian Thomas Jr., right, if this receiver class is very deep, but there aren't too many size speed profiles like Brian Thomas Jr. You've got Xavier Legette, right? But he's more 6'1", 220, and he's not quite as nuanced as a route runner right now. I think Brian Thomas Jr. has superior route flexibility. I think he's got a little bit more upside in that route tree department as well. So, you know, yes, the receiver class is deep, but the class of athletes like Brian Thomas Jr. is not quite as deep in this class. So it depends on who you want. If you're willing to pass up Brian Thomas Jr. and maybe get a guy like Roman Wilson or Ricky Pearsall or Jermaine Burton in round 3 or 4, right, like you could absolutely wait and get a CB in round 1. But if you want a guy who can provide the upside and scheme versatility that Brian Thomas Jr. can, you might be a little hard-pressed to find that guy later on. So, yes and no. I agree, and I don't. I think it's a nuanced discussion. But either way, I think both positions are deep, so it's just a matter of what kind of prototype you're looking for.
So, as an example, you would go Brian Thomas round 1 and maybe Max Melton out of Rutgers, a DB in round 2, instead of, say, Kool-Aid McKinstry in round 1 and Ricky Pearsall in round 2.
Yes, absolutely. I think Brian Thomas Jr., he's just too good of a fit for what they need and what he can do in that offense, right? You know, it's one of those things, you are playing the board a little bit and you're playing with fire either way, because you're risking the fact that maybe the CB you like won't be there at 48. But, you know, I see maybe Max Melton or even Kalen Carson or Renardo Green, right? Maybe you have to move the board and trade down a little bit to get those guys optimal value. But I think Brian Thomas Jr. is just such a unique receiver as that wide receiver four. He's not quite at the big three for me, but he's in a tier by himself, I think. So if you can get him at 17, that would be tough for me to pass over. And I know in my current mock that just posted, I did pass over him just to see what kind of value you could get later on. And I think it served as an example that if you wait, you might be playing with fire and you might wait a little too long.
Ian, as we wrap up, I was on Pro Football Network this morning. I've been doing a Monday mock for the last couple of weeks. I love the mock draft simulator you guys have at PFN. And the more times I do it, more times than not, Jared Verse has fallen to me at 17. And I understand that may not be the biggest need here in Jacksonville, but good grief, man. If you give me Eric Armstead, Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, and Jared Verse, that to me would be hard to pass up. What are the chances that you believe Verse will actually be there at 17? And if he is, what would your thoughts be on Jacksonville taking him?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a good chance that one of those top edges is still there at 17. I think Jared Verse, Lasu, Latu, Chop Robinson, I think good chance one of them will be there, maybe even two, right? It depends on how the board falls. He'd be a fun fit, man. It's something that you dream about. And again, you know, it comes at the cost of a receiver or a corner. So that's the trade-off. That's the opportunity cost. But thinking about him in that defensive line, you've got Josh Allen, who's the pass rushing technician right now. You've got Trayvon Walker, who's growing in that phase, but his primary utility is always going to be as that battering ram, that power profile, right? That power prototype. And then you've got Travis Gibson, who's a solid rotational threat. But I think Jared Verse, man, would really add to the depth and the overall utility of that unit, because Trayvon Walker, you can move him around a little bit. Josh Allen is that pass rushing, you know, force. And then Jared Verse is that speed to power phenom who just explode inside tackles, cave in the pocket, but then a great run defender as well, right? You know, he doesn't quite provide the bend capacity that you're looking for, but I think as a speed to power guy with very tenacious hand usage, a good run defense, he kind of adds another element to that rotation and allows you to play off each other even more. So it's fun to think about, right? In the modern NFL, you need to impact the opposing quarterback. And what's the best way to do that? Generate pressure. And I think having that trio, you can do so many different things with them. You can stunt, you can line up across each other. You can have Trayvon Walker line up inside at 4-eye and Jared Verse at 5-tech or 7-tech, right? There's so many different ways to scheme those guys. And I think that's the appeal with that.
Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network. Ian, final question, whether it's AFC South related or outside the division, give me a surprise on Thursday night, either somebody that's going to go way early than people expect, or somebody that's going to plummet. What's your biggest surprise you're expecting on Thursday?
Biggest surprise, I'll stick in the AFC South, and this is one that I've been thinking about for a while, if it happens. I don't know if he's going to fall to that point, but I think the floor for Georgia tight end Brock Bowers is 15. And if he's there at 15, I could see the Colts scooping him up and getting him with Anthony Richardson. I think that would be a phenomenal fit. I think it would be pretty scary for the rest of the AFC South, but looking at Richardson coming back to full health with the arm that he has that hit Bowers on those seam throws and the things that Bowers can do in Shane Steichen's offense as a vertical and lateral threat, it's too good of a fit for me, and it could ultimately happen. We know that teams have a hard time valuing tight ends, so if he falls to that point, I say look out for that fit. It could be a fun one.
Ian, absolutely tremendous stuff. Can't thank you enough. Tell the good folks here in Jacksonville about your coverage, about PFN's coverage, what you guys will have coming out this week.
Yeah, for sure. So you can follow me at @IC_draft on Twitter. Pro Football Network is at PFN365. We got a lot of good coverage coming this week. We'll have a draft preview. We've had some video stuff, but on draft night, we will have multiple analysts grading the picks live as they occur. So you'll have the analysis right away on draft night. You'll be able to review your team's selections and who they take. And then we'll have post-draft analysis as well. You know, it'll never stop. And then eventually we're going to roll to 2025 and you'll get to look again to the future and see what you might be able to do in the years to come. So the draft cycle never truly rests, but here at PFN, we're trying to wrap it up with Bo this year. It's going to be fun when we're going to be fun to follow it all through the 3 days.
He's one of the best in the business, Ian Cummings of Pro Football Network. Ian, again, thank you. Let's do it again post-draft, and we'll see where the dust has settled when it comes to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Really appreciate it, pal.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Ryan.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Updating you on the NBA playoffs, 4 minutes to go in the third quarter. Cleveland all over Orlando, 71-54. Although Jalen Suggs, who got hurt early in the game, has returned. but the Cavaliers about to take a 2-0 lead in this series. As a Magic fan, I said last week, everything else was gravy after making the playoffs, and I believe that. I'm not just saying it now. Go back and listen to what I said last week when we had a couple of guests on. I didn't want to feel that way, but making the playoffs was the goal. They did that. To me, everything else was gravy. Do I like the fact that they look like they don't belong in this series? No. That's unfortunate. That part sucks. But they were never going to beat Cleveland in a best of seven. Cleveland, you know who Orlando is? They're Cleveland of last year. Cleveland of last year got back in the playoffs, took it on the chops from the Knicks. Orlando will learn from this, and they'll go out and finally get some shooting in free agency. But they're probably going to get swept at this point. Good one at the Garden right now. Game two, Philadelphia and New York. The Sixers up 53-49 at halftime. They're trying to even that series at one. Of course, later on tonight, the Lakers and the Nuggets. Denver leads that series 1-0. Back into the Jaguars in just a moment. Brian Sexton, Jaguars.com, coming up in about 10 minutes or so. I mentioned I had a story from Raymond James Stadium on Saturday. So I go down to the Kenny Chesney concert. What a show, by the way. Man alive. It's a stadium show for Kenny Chesney. That guy's 56 years old. You would never know it. He is in ridiculous shape for what he does for over 2 hours out there on stage. Zac Brown Band. I mean, it's a really good, really good lineup. So we're there, Denmark, and this didn't even dawn on me until we got in the stadium. And maybe it wouldn't have mattered anyway, but the concert was on April 20th, right?
Okay.
It was on 4/20.
Yep.
So, you know, walking into the stadium, there was the aroma, right?
Got some hits.
Yeah, but I didn't really think much of it. You're at a concert, you know, whatever. So we go to our seats, pretty good seats, actually. If you're familiar with Raymond James Stadium, we were in, I believe it was called the Hyundai Club. We were, imagine probably the 15-yard line on the lower bowl, about halfway up, very close to the stage, actually. We were on where the stage was, probably 25, 30 rows away from the stage and the grandstand. And I'm looking at Heidi. We're there enjoying. I think this was when Zac Brown Band was on. Kenny hadn't even come out yet. And I got the whiff of the aroma, right? But this wasn't just a whiff. This was a lot, like, and engulfing where I was. So I take a look around, just a brief gander around my surroundings. And sure enough, this woman, it was me, Heidi, and this woman. And she just decides in the middle of the Zac Brown Band, in the middle of Raymond James Stadium, just light up a doobie. Just right then and there, in the bowl. I was like, wow, that is absolutely amazing. Now, did I say anything to her? No. I mean, she was actually pleasant. She was probably had the munchies, I guess. But what I came to find out very quickly was even though there were 75,000 people at this place, they have drones, man, that are watching you and watching your every move.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
And it was 15 or 20 minutes later after this woman literally lit up a doobie right next to us that stadium security and the Tampa Police Department was there. And they knew it was either the woman or Heidi because they couldn't pinpoint which one. And my wife, I don't think has ever done that in her life. At least she hasn't done it in the 8.5 years, 9 years that I've known her. And I just so happened to be doing a panoramic shot of the stadium earlier and caught this woman literally lighting this doobie in my video. But I did not have to go to the video footage because other people around kind of pointed out, you know, Bertha sitting next to my wife. The police was actually very cool to her. They were like, all right, look, we know what you did. We saw it on video. Do not do it again or you're out of here. So they could have been a lot harsher. I mean, you could have gotten arrested for that, obviously. But they didn't. I don't think they knew it was a doobie. I thought they think they was like a cigarette or something. But regardless, and then she didn't do it again. They went on to have a great time.
So how high is the drone above you?
Well, I thought it was part of like the Kenny Chesney video package. Like, I thought maybe they were recording a video or something on his website or put something on social media. No, come to find out, that drone is watching you go. And I mean, it went back and forth a bunch. And the absolutely hilarious thing was after they talked to said woman about the doobie, the drone would like stop in front of our section for like 5 seconds. It wouldn't go straight across. It would like stop for the next, you know, 30 to 40 minutes, and then it would keep going. So they kept tabs on her. Although, as any good person in that regard would do, she found a caveat. Once Kenny was on stage, everybody was standing up. It was dark. People were having a great time. So she just knelt down behind everybody who was standing up and went back for said doobage. So that the cops didn't necessarily stop her. They stopped her for about an hour and a half. But, yeah, that was something.
Did you get a secondhand high at all?
No, I didn't. Did I do one of these? Like that, you know, the absolute inhale? It crossed my mind, but I didn't. I was being a gentleman. But, no, I've never really done that. Even when I was in college, statute of limitations, that's never really been my thing. I just never would have had the audacity to just light up a joint in the middle of 75,000 people.
Oh, it's pretty popular. Like rap concerts, that's pretty common.
I was just like,
everybody.
She didn't give two you know what's. I mean, it's daylight. It's 6:30, 7 o'clock when Zach Brown Band was out there, and she was just going to town. But anyway, great concert. Raymond James Stadium. I know it's one of the older stadiums, but, man, I love that place. Awesome. Easy to get in and out of. Del Mabry, that road out there, that's a lot of fun, man. Tampa was a good time. And Kenny Chesney's touring for the next 4 months, almost a stadium every week. Crazy, his concert schedule. Back into the Jacksonville Jaguars. Enough talk about doobies at Kenny Chesney concerts. Let's get into pick 17. Let's get into the Jaguars. What are they going to do Thursday night? What do they need to do Thursday night? What should they do on Thursday night? Brian Sexton, Jaguars.com. He's actually going to be in Detroit later in the week. We'll catch up with him in Detroit. We're going to catch up with him now to preview the Jaguars, the first round, and what Brian thinks they need to accomplish over this three-day period in Detroit, Michigan. On a Monday night edition of Hacker After Dark, we're glad you're with us here at 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The NFL Draft has arrived this week, Thursday night, up in Detroit. Of course, the Jaguars hold the 17th pick in round number one. 8 picks in total for the Jaguars, including 1 in the first, 1 in the second, and the third, and remember, 2 fourth-round selections. Let's talk draft. Let's talk Jags with my buddy Brian Sexton of Jaguars.com. He will be on his way to Detroit, Michigan tomorrow. He's kind enough to give us some time this evening here on 1010XL. Brian, how you doing?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you?
Brian, we're good. We took a while to get here, but we're here. It's draft week. And just your initial thoughts, the way the offseason has gone. I haven't talked to you since Josh Allen got that huge contract extension. How do you feel the Jags have fared leading into the draft on Thursday night?
Well, I think they've checked all the boxes, to be honest with you. They were more aggressive in free agency than I thought they'd be able to be with their cap situation, especially at that time, when they did most of the work, Josh Allen was eating up $24 million of it. So they were very clever. They got some deals done. You know, when you can squeeze in Mitch Morse and Eric Armstead, right, help for the middle of each side of the ball on the line, I didn't know that they'd get it done. So there's obviously a lot of tricks, and they were able to massage some things. Now they've got cap room. Now they've got the quarterback. He's the last thing, right, that you'd like to see them get done before this season begins, so that you set up your salary cap for the next 5 years, because the quarterback will absolutely dictate how you're able to operate in future seasons. But I thought it was a very productive offseason, and I guess I shouldn't say there's one last thing to be done, because I'm headed to Detroit for one of the two last things that need to be done, and that's the draft.
Yeah, the draft is a big one, certainly for the Jaguars. Again, the 17th pick in round number one. Brian, you were down there last week when Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson met the media at the pre-draft luncheon. What were your biggest takeaways from what the GM and the head coach had to say last week?
You know, Ryan, I got to be honest with you. I've done that draft luncheon so long, I've realized how fruitless it is for us. You can't tell whether they're telling you something honestly or whether they're sending a smoke signal out. You know, for instance, when Trent Baalke was talking about the depth of the quarterback class, was he saying, hey, watch out for us, we may go deep to the second or third round to get that corner? Or was he saying, we're going to strike and get our guy early? I mean, you just hats off to him. He creates a cloud like a lot of general managers want to do, and it's hard to walk away. I guess the only takeaway that I come away with from last week's luncheon was simply that they felt like they were very productive, that they checked the boxes on their to-do list, and that they were sitting in a position where they can take the best available player. And Ryan, look, I'm a BAP guy, right? When don't you need a great player? When would you take a good player at a position you like over a great player at a position that you may always need? So they put themselves in a position that they can do what they want to do. They don't have to reach at any one spot. And they call it lining up and playing. They could line up and play next fall with what they've got right now. I like that because it means that they can take a big picture approach to their roster and look down the road. Because let's be honest, rookies aren't about, the draft isn't about, except in extreme circumstances, this coming season. It's about setting yourself up for the next 3 to 5 years with good players to surround your quarterback.
Brian Sexton of Jaguars.com. Brian, there's four branches I want to go down with you when it comes to the draft. Three different positions, right, and then a caveat at the end. Number one, okay, is corner, all right? Everybody talks about defensive back. We know Tyson Campbell. We know Ronald Darby. And we believe Darnell Savage is going to be the nickel. After that, Monterick Brown, Gregory Jr., some young guys that have played sparingly. How big a need do you feel corner is, and do you feel Quinyon Mitchell and or Terrion Arnold would be the perfect fit here, as some are describing?
Well, I think it's if it's not one, it's certainly two on the priority list. And my only question about those two players is that neither one of them played much press man coverage in college. Mitchell played at Toledo where they didn't ask him to do it. I mean, he's got blazing speed, great feet. He's that off-the-ball mirror guy. And who doesn't need a great player, but does he fit the system that they run here? Hard for us to say since we haven't seen exactly how Ryan Nielsen wants to play. Same thing with Terrion Arnold. He's a 187-pound corner. Tough for him to play press man and redirect some of these bigger receivers. The guy I favor is the kid from Iowa, Cooper DeGene. Got to get that pronunciation right. DeGene. He's bigger. He ran faster than both of the Alabama quarterbacks and gives them the flexibility to play inside, outside, or even safety. Tremendous athlete. And he's a pure, shouldn't say pure, but he's a pure athlete who can play press corner. Not as explosive at the top of the route. You know, guys can get separation on him. He's got to be really on top of his game, but he's a press corner, and he's a big guy at the line of scrimmage. I like that. The kid from Alabama, Terrion. He is a guy who will probably be gone by the time the Jaguars pick. So they'll be picking between the Mitchell kid from Toledo, the McKinstry kid from Alabama, and the DeGene kid from Iowa.
And the interesting thing there, Brian, if Mitchell is gone, which some are proclaiming, and Arnold's gone, you're a DeGene guy. Let me ask you, would you be okay if they drafted DeGene at 17 overall?
Yes. Yeah, because I think he's the kind of guy that could go at 20 to San Francisco, and you watch them turn him into an all-world player in the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Dane Brugler, who is as good a draft analyst as there is, wrote, he does fun things with the ball in his hand. They used him on offense before he broke his leg. He had 7 interceptions, 3 of which he returned for touchdowns. He is a really good player, and a smart defensive coordinator will take a guy like that and turn him into somebody that the rest of the league goes, wow, we didn't see that one coming.
Brian Sexton, Jaguars.com. All right, Brian, wide receiver. If it's not DB, many proclaim wide receiver. We know Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, and Zay Jones. All the talk about Brian Thomas of LSU. Based on what I'm hearing, it seems at least right now that he is starting to separate himself a little bit from A.D. Mitchell from Texas. What would your thoughts be about Brian Thomas coming here at 17?
Well, listen, if he's the best player on the board, I take him, right? I mean, if he is sitting there and he has the highest grade on the board, if I'm a best available player protege, if that's what I proclaim, then I got to stick to it. And I say, if that's the grade you have on him, absolutely. There's this passion for wide receiver, and I get it. It's a passing league, and you've got a star young quarterback, and you want to give him weapons. This is a deep draft for wide receivers. If there's an offensive lineman or a defensive back that's on the board that you like better, that has a better grade, man, I would take them, because there's Troy Franklin, the kid from Oregon that comes to mind, and the Rice kid from USC, and the Xavier Leggett guy from South Carolina. I mean, there's a lot of guys in the second and third round who are big guys with long arms and run fast. Are they as polished? No, they're not. But, I mean, who knew that Puka Nacua was going to be the all-everything wide receiver in this draft last year, right? I mean, so they have big names. They played at big programs. They're exciting players to watch. I understand that. But the game is played at all levels now, from the quarterback and passing, which means there are receivers aplenty that you can find. So I wouldn't reach for him. If he is the best available player, no problem with it. Take him, because he's got the measurables. He looks like that kind of guy that you don't have right now. But I wouldn't reach for it.
Do you believe, Brian, receiver is as big a position of need as many outside of Jacksonville proclaim that it is?
No, I don't. I think that you've got a quarterback who can make his receivers into, I don't want to say stars, because to be a star, you've got to have that potential athleticism. But I think if you go back and look at what Trevor Lawrence did with Marvin Jones and Zay Jones and Christian Kirk and Evan Engram in 2022, he was highly efficient down the stretch, putting the ball wherever it needed to be. I think Trevor Lawrence is the kind of quarterback that can make his receivers. He can throw them open. He can put them in positions to succeed. I don't think it is. I think, and I don't want to get ahead of you, I think offensive line is a huge need, because, and is that one of your three points? Can I go there?
Yeah, you know, and the reason why is, you know, like you mentioned, the draft is not a one-year situation. The draft is supposed to be a 5 to 10 year situation. And you look after 2024, I mean, there's depth there now, but Cam Robinson's a free agent. Walker Little's a free agent. Who knows what their futures are? If you draft an offensive tackle, Brian, he may not necessarily start this year, which I think people would have some issue with taking him at 17, but he may be your opening day left starter in 2025, so it's certainly an interesting question.
Well, and you've got a right guard that's over 30 and a center that's over 30. You've got to be looking at that. If you go back to last year, what did we talk about time and again? We talked about an inability to run the football, to convert third and short, to move the ball between the tackles, and we talked about the quarterback getting hit way too often. In fact, the reason that they slid off the map and out of the playoffs was because they couldn't protect the quarterback and he wasn't healthy down the stretch. There's no more important position in my mind than making sure you have a great offensive line for this quarterback. And, Brian, this is as good a draft for offensive line as I've seen in my 31 years covering professional football. There are 10 guys that will have first-round grades. 10. That's almost a third of the draft. And you, what do you want? You want a big right tackle so you can slide Anton Harrison over to left? Done, right? There are right tackles there. You want a guy that can play all five positions? The guy that I love is from Washington, Troy Fa'o-Tanu. I got to get that right. I got to say it slow. He played left tackle. He's Leon Searcy's size. He's got long arms and a powerful punch. He could play right tackle. He might be a great center. They think he's got five position ability on the offensive line. The kid from Duke. There are so many choices at offensive line, and big guys are harder to find than wide receivers. Big guys who can play on the line of scrimmage and dominate are very difficult to find. It just so happens that there will be a wide range of them available to you at 17. So I don't want to take a receiver if I can get a big guy and get my receiver in the second round.
Final moments with Brian Sexton of Jaguars.com. Brian, that brings me to my caveat, and it's kind of what your thought was on the best available player. I've seen a lot of mock drafts, and I didn't think this was possible a month ago or even a couple of weeks ago, but the more mock drafts that come out, Latu from UCLA and Jared Verse from Florida State, both of those guys, one of them may be there at 17 on Thursday night. Is it the biggest position of need? No, it probably isn't. But if you tell me, let's take Jared Verse as an example, that I can have Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, Eric Armstead, and Jared Verse on my defensive line, knowing I got to beat C.J. Stroud and beat all these quarterbacks in the AFC, Brian, I think one of the things no one has been talking about for whatever reason, after Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker, they had nothing to affect the quarterback last year. And all they've done is add Travis Gibson, and we'll see. He had an injury-plagued year in Nashville in 23, but they have not addressed the edge rush after Allen and Walker, and it's just interesting to me that that's not being talked about more.
Listen, I'd throw the Murphy kid, the defensive tackle from Texas, in the mix as well there. You don't think about defensive line as much because there are other needs, but again, when don't you need a great player? And I love Jared Verse. If he's sitting there at 17, if Byron Murphy is sitting there at 17, you have tough decisions to make because you are always looking to impact the quarterback. So I'll sing my refrain for you again. If that's the player with the best grade on your board and he fits your scheme, got to say that. If Ryan Nielsen says that guy is exactly what I want, take him. Take him. With the quarterback that you have, you are going to put a priority on offense. However, your defense is going to have to break serve in the second half on one or two occasions. So if there's a great disruptive player there, man, give him to me, whether he's on the corner or whether he's in that front set.
Brian, you're heading to Detroit tomorrow. We're going to have you on Wednesday to do a preview from the scene. But tell people, Jaguars.com, what you guys have coming up over the coming days.
Well, we'll do Jags AM on Wednesday instead of Tuesday this week, and we'll do it in the afternoon because on Wednesday morning there's an event with players, draft prospects, and local peewee kids in Detroit. So we'll get a chance to catch up with some of these names that we've been talking about the last 10 minutes, Ryan, and hopefully have some insight for you there. And then on Thursday, of course, you know, we'll have radio, we'll have internet, we'll have television coverage. And for the folks that are going to the stadium for the draft party, I'll have a report before the draft. And hopefully, there's only 13 players going, Ryan. This is not the big player-driven event that it's been in the past, which is somewhat disappointing when you go all the way up there and you want to – when the Jaguars make their pick, I want to follow this guy through the whole process. They call it the car wash, all the national radio and television and sponsor things. You know, it's a fun night when they draft and you get to spend time with the prospect, your new player and his family, and experience all of that with him. So hopefully we've got our player in Detroit and we can spend the evening with him, and that'll give us a lot of behind-the-scenes kind of coverage that people are used to if they watch the huddle the hunt and things that we do.
Brian Sexton, Jaguars.com. Brian, safe travels to the Motor City. We'll talk to you in about 48 hours, and we'll get a scene set from up there in Detroit. Thank you, my friend.
You got it, Ryan. Looking forward to it.
This is Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yes, it is. With you till 10 o'clock tonight, 1010XL, 92.5 FM, coming up in less than 15 minutes, former Jaguar defensive lineman Lijay Douzable. Lijay played over a decade in the National Football League. I think he had a cup of coffee with at least 9 NFL teams, including a stop right here with the Jaguars on the D-line. You see him now at CBS Sports HQ. You hear him on Sirius XM NFL Radio. We'll go down memory lane with Lijay and his time here in Jacksonville, but primarily we'll get his thoughts on the Jags offseason to this point, what he thinks the Jaguars should do in the draft on Thursday night, and we'll talk a little bit about the rest of the AFC South. Speaking of the AFC South, we're going to keep an eye on them, right? Going to keep an eye on what the Titans do over this three-day period at the draft and the Texans and the Colts. You know, it's interesting. Tennessee has the seventh pick. They are almost a lock to take an offensive tackle if one is there, which would be Joe Alt, the big tackle out of Notre Dame. I know people in Nashville covet him. They want to get some protection for Will Levis because their offensive line was absolutely horrid at times last year. But I've also seen some thoughts that Tennessee could be trading back to accumulate more picks. Or what if they say, you know what? Treylon Burks is not getting the job done. We got Calvin Ridley. We got DeAndre Hopkins. Why don't we take a shot at Brock Bowers? Or why don't we take a shot at Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze? And that would scare me a little bit. I mean, if you have Tony Pollard, Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins, and then all of a sudden you were to add a Malik Nabers or a Brock Bowers or a Rome Odunze, I don't know if they're going to stop anybody up in Nashville, but they're going to score an awful lot of points. I think they're going to go offensive line. That's what all the projections seem to indicate. But what if they say, man, we have a real opportunity to get another playmaker for Will Levis? Houston is interesting because we saw last year how much they like to wheel and deal. They were trading up. They were trading down. They were trading all around the draft. Ultimately, of course, landing with C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, which was an incredible get for them. Obviously, they don't have the capital that they did last year because they lost some of it trading up to get Will Anderson. But you expect Houston to keep wheeling and dealing. That's their MO. That's what they like to do, moving up and moving down. Texans look like they're going to be the favorites, the clear favorites heading into the division in 2024. And as far as Indianapolis goes, they pick two spots in front of you in round number one. And you could make an argument one of their biggest needs is one of the Jaguars' biggest needs, which is defensive back. So, good eye on what Indy does. Will they go Terrion Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell? How much salt in the wound would it be if you want a corner for the Jags at 17 and your division rival snatches him up, either Quinyon Mitchell or Terrion Arnold, just two picks in front of you? We did a lot on cornerback tonight. Again, I think there are three positions. Defensive back, primarily corner, obviously. Wide receiver and offensive tackle. We did a deep dive into corner tonight. We'll do a deep dive into wide receiver tomorrow. And finally, we'll do a deep dive into offensive tackle on Wednesday. Remember, we're not on Thursday night. The Jaguar Draft Show will be. I believe I'm actually in Thursday sitting in with Hayes Carline on the Franzi Show. That seems to be the word on the street, Denmark, so I'm excited about that. But Friday night, we will be here. Head coach Dave Campo will join me in studio on Hacker After Dark, and we'll talk about round two and round three as it is going on while we're on the air. But let's talk Jags. Let's talk AFC South, and let's talk draft with Lijay Douzable, a former Jacksonville Jaguar defensive lineman. You see him now, CBS Sports HQ. You also can hear him at SiriusXM NFL Radio. More NFL, that's primarily what we're doing all week leading up to the draft, which is less now than 72 hours away. Let's talk to a 10-year NFL veteran, former Jaguar defensive lineman, Lijay Douzable, next on a Monday night edition of Hacker After Dark. Back here on 1010XL at 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, your home for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We are glad you are with us. Of course, the NFL draft next Thursday night up in Detroit. The Jaguars have the 17th pick in round number one. It has been a very active offseason for the Jaguars, really a very active offseason for every AFC South team. Let's talk about all of it with a man that played 10 years in the National Football League, including right here in Jacksonville. He was a fan favorite when he was here, Legay Douzeable. You see him now at CBS Sports HQ. You hear him on SiriusXM NFL Radio. And Legay is always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Legay, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Legay, we're good, man. Thank you for the time. And it's good to have you back on the airwaves here in Jacksonville. I know your stay here wasn't very long, about a year or so, and a 10-year NFL career. But what are some of your memories from your time here with the Jacksonville Jaguars?
I mean, it was a great 2 years. I honestly believe my time at Jacksonville in 2010 and in 2011 literally was what kind of shaped my NFL career. Literally was the first time I was able to start in my career. Remember having a great defense, especially in that 2011 year when we were able to get Puz in free agency, and you know, me, Pat Rose, and Tyson Alualu up front. And you know, Kampman didn't play as much because of injury, but just having his, you know, is his veteran presence there. And it was so interesting because when I got to Jacksonville in 2010 before the season, I ultimately became the eldest statement in the D-line room, which was interesting because it was only in year three for me, right? Because, like I said, Aaron Kampman was there, but he was injured. So, like, he, you know, was doing a lot of rehab during the season. He would come to meetings from time to time, but it, like, ultimately, like, made me the veteran presence in that room, and I was just going into year three. So, like, I always like to say, like, I have so much love for Duval. Like you said, I tried to be one of the fan favorites, interact with the fans there, and I kind of became a man, or who I was going to be in the NFL, starting with my time in Jacksonville.
And you went on to play 10 years in the National Football League. That is not easy to do on the defensive line, no question about that. Legay, it was a very active offseason for the Jaguars, and I guess it needed to be based on the collapse at the end of last year, losing 5 out of 6. Before we get to the additions, let's take a look back, man. 8-3 to missing the playoffs. What did you take away from the Jaguars' 2023 campaign?
Yeah, so it was almost like they were on opposite ends of the spectrum when you look at how the 2022 season ended compared to the 2023 season, right? The Jacksonville Jaguars started off slow in 2022 and then got on a heat streak that, you know, propelled them into the playoffs. And then ultimately, one of the greatest come-from-behind wins in playoff history versus the, you know, the L.A. Chargers. And then the following year, you know, high expectations. They start the season off right, like you said, I believe 8-3 to start the season. And then it just a collapse down, you know, down the wire. And you, there's so many things that you can put or kind of put the blame on, right? Trevor Lawrence wasn't 100% healthy. Offensive line was beat up, didn't protect really well. The defense didn't play as well down the back stretch as they did in the beginning of the season. So this is a season that's, I would say, expectations are high. Trevor Lawrence is in that era where he's, you know, due for a new deal. You know, anytime you pay the quarterback, that's when things get real because you can't afford to pay everybody else. So this is, I would say, a make or break year for Trevor Lawrence, right? To prove that he is the next guy, the next great quarterback, because people, when he came out, were saying they compared him to being as good as Andrew Luck in regards to a draft pick going that high that was going to be a for sure thing. So this is a big year for the Jacksonville Jaguars because, again, there were so many expectations. I think one thing that people didn't talk about enough was when Christian Kirk got hurt, that hurt Trevor Lawrence in this offense a lot. That's his safety blanket. That's the guy he trusts. That's where he goes in pressure situations. And not having him down the back end of the season really hurt this team.
Completely agree. When Christian Kirk got hurt, it was like the first play of the game, that Monday nighter against Cincinnati. The offense was not the same after that. Legay, they added a lot of folks in free agency, and we'll get to your side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball, in a moment. But clearly the big story, Calvin Ridley gone, Gabe Davis in. That's kind of gotten panned nationally. Let's actually begin there. We like the Gabe Davis signing. I think it has a lot of Christian Kirk vibes, honestly, from 2 years ago. That got panned nationally, and now no one really laughs at that anymore. I think Gabe Davis might have a similar result. What was your thought on Gabe Davis's arrival here in Jacksonville?
Home run signing. I honestly wanted Even though, you know, I spent 2 years in Jacksonville, most of my career I spent with the Jets. I wanted the Jets to sign him so bad, right? I thought that would be a home run signing for the Jets, Ryan. And people kind of scoffed at the Gabe Davis signing. And you made a great point. People said the same thing when Christian Kirk signed that deal to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think when Jacksonville goes back and they look at tape, right, they saw what Gabe Davis did to them earlier in the season when he was playing for the Buffalo Bills. They saw when he actually gets the targets, like the numbers that he puts up. The crazy thing is when you look at him and Stephon Diggs, I'm not comparing the two players, but Stephon Diggs, I think, got targeted three more times, but I think only had 300 more receiving yards than Gabe Davis. So you're talking about a guy that can really stretch the field, a guy that can go up in the red zone, is ultimately competitive. Just to tell you about Gabe Davis, and I know him personally, he went to UCF, he's my little brother. He was going into his fourth year last year, right? You have a true number one receiver, you have a perennial Pro Bowl quarterback, you have an all-pro tackle, and yet Gabe Davis was still voted as a team captain. That lets you know what that team thought about Gabe Davis, because usually your number two receiver isn't a team captain on the team, right? But that lets you know the work that he puts in, the kind of attitude that he brought to that locker room, and what he meant to that team. So I thought this was a home run signing. He's back at home, right? His family's going to be able to watch him. He's highly motivated because, you know, it's, even though it's a two-year deal, he's going to want to re-sign and re-up soon as well. So, like, you're going to get a highly motivated Gabe Davis who's back at home where he's comfortable.
That's a fantastic point. He just turned 25 years old. I mean, it's not very often you get to sign a player of his caliber at that age. Couple of more for 10-year NFL vet Lejay Doosable. Spent some of that time right here with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Lejay, you look at the line of scrimmage. Trent Baalke at the end of the year held his press conference and said, look, we got beat up in the middle of our O-line and our D-line. We got to get more physical. We got to get tougher. And it's not going to sell a lot of season tickets, right? Maybe not the most glamorous additions, but Mitch Morse at center, Eric Armstead in the interior D-line. Your thoughts on both signings?
Yeah, you have to win through the trenches. I think any team that you have seen have sustained success, and that's where they win. Let's not forget the year where Patrick Mahomes got beat up by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after they won the Super Bowl the year before. What did they literally do the next year? They rectify the offensive line, right? And they end up getting two Pro Bowl calibers picks in the draft in Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. Well, Jacksonville realized, like, we were getting beat up in the interior offensive line. Let's go get Mitch Morse, who's been a Pro Bowl, a steady Eddie center, right? Who's played at a high level. And then let's double down, right? We need some pass rush from the inside. We know Josh Allen can get to the quarterback. Trayvon Walker really came on strong at the end of the year. Let's go get a guy like Eric Armstead, who has the position flexibility to play outside and inside, but is going to give us interior pass rush right away. So when Josh Allen turns the corner or Trayvon Walker turns the corner, the quarterback can't step up because Eric Armstead is there. And we saw him dominate in the Super Bowl last year. Now, he was a little beat up last year, but he saved his best for last. He probably had his best career game in the Super Bowl versus Chiefs, where he was just purely dominant. And if you look at that team, especially the 49ers on defense, they were not the same team when Eric Armstead was not in the lineup. So you add Eric Armstead to the lineup. You got Robinson in there as well. You would hope that Hamilton comes back healthy this year. Now you have a couple viable pieces where you can get a rotation and guys can come in waves. Let's not forget, they made a defensive coordinator change. Ryan Nielsen is more of a four-down front man, right? He wants to send rushers in waves, right? And now they have the depth to do that.
Lejay, of the other guys they signed, right, Darnell Savage, you got Ronald Darby, guys of that sort. Trevis Gibson, I think, is a way under-the-radar signing. He didn't do much in Tennessee.
Signing too.
Yeah, Chicago, he had 10 sacks in 21 and 22 combined. Any of those other signings kind of excite you a little bit for the Jaguars?
Well, no, I like the Trevis Gibson, like you said. You know, within Chicago, weird situation when they end up going to the Tennessee Titans and still played really well in a deep defensive line there. So I think that's an under-the-radar signing. It kind of reminds me of the signing of, Ryan, you can help me out, the guy that they signed 2 years ago that's at Tennessee now, the outside linebacker.
Oh, Arden Key, yeah. That's a good comparison.
It kind of reminds me of that signing. The Trevis Gibson signing kind of reminds me of Arden Key signing. And we saw Arden Key had a lot of success in Jacksonville before going on to Tennessee. So that is an under-the-radar sign. I think Ronald Darby is an underrated signing too, because you lose Darius Williams, but you lower the cap number in what you're paying Darby. And Darby played really well for the Baltimore Ravens last year as well. So I like that. I think those two are the biggest under the radar signings for this Jacksonville team.
Final moments with Legay Doosable, a 10-year NFL vet. You see him now at CBS Sports HQ. You can also hear him on Sirius XM NFL Radio. Legay, the draft's coming up next week. Everybody's talking about wide receiver. Everybody's talking about DB here in Jacksonville. And while I agree with that, look, I got one caveat, and my caveat is simply this. I didn't think this was possible 2 months ago or even a month ago, but the more mock drafts I see, the more Jared Verse might be there at 17, all right? Now I'm going right to your neck of the woods on the D-line.
Which is crazy to me. I don't think he's going to be there, but like you're right, Ryan. The more – I mean, and again, one thing I will tell you, and this is with respect, Ryan – media does not know what's going on in regards to the draft. I'm just going to be, and I'm part of the media, right? So I'm going to let you know right now, because again, last year, nobody saw Darnell Wright going 10 overall, right? And he went 10 overall. So it's just like, you really never know how the draft is going to play out. You can kind of give an educated guess. I just from what Jared Verse put on tape, I know, to me, Leao Tulatu, if he was 100% healthy, would be my number one edge guy. But that's a big question mark when you have a neck fusion, right? So, like, I just don't see passers and pass rushers run the league. I don't see Jared Verse falling to 17. I just don't see it. But if he does, I mean, it's something to talk about.
One could dream, Legay. One could dream. You have Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, Eric Armstead, and Jared Verse. Sign me up for that right now. When you look at the Jaguar roster, though, if it does come down to wide receiver or DB, where would you go at 17?
I would lean towards corner, right? And in this league, you got to have three viable corners. You have Campbell, you have Darby. I think you still need one more guy. A guy that makes sense, if Terrion Arnold is there, he makes a lot of sense. I think he'll be gone by the Colts pick. I think they pick 15, if I'm not mistaken. But Quinyon Mitchell, I think, would fit perfectly in this Ryan Nielsen defense. Like the attitude that he plays with, the calm, cool collectiveness, he's comfortable being on an island. And I don't believe there's a better corner at tracking the football than Quinyon Mitchell in this draft. So to me, I would lean towards corner. Just because I think, you know, Jacksonville Jaguars still have a lot of firepower on offense. Like, you could always use technically another receiver. Yes, you lost Calvin Ridley, but you signed Gabe Davis, which, again, I don't think people realize how big of a signing that is. I think they'll find out soon enough how big that signing is. I think you need to shore up that defense to get a shutdown corner.
Well, Jay, as we wrap up, the AFC South was maybe the most boring, worst division in football, whatever verbiage you want to use, in August. Here we are in April. Is there a more intriguing division coming into the year with everything that's transpired? It's crazy, the transformation in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I don't think there is. Like, and honestly, could this be a division that essentially went from the worst division in the AFC to maybe even the strongest, dare I say, when you look at the Houston Texans and what they did, you know, trading for Stephon Diggs and then also going to the second round of the playoffs when I believe they were tied for the worst odds to even go to the Super Bowl last year. So, you know, CJ Stroud looks as good as advertised, and you would assume that he's only going to get better now that you added some more firepower to that offense. So DeMeco Ryans has really revamped that defense. That defensive line has been revamped as well. So you look at them, you look at Jacksonville, you think they would bounce back if everybody were to stay healthy. Trevor Lawrence stays healthy. You've added pieces to the offense and defensive line. We know what Christian Kirk is. We know what Etienne is in the backfield. And you have Josh Allen signed. So now he can just relax and play football and not have to worry about trying to play on the franchise tag. So to me, and then you look at the Tennessee Titans, right? Will Levis going into his second year. They signed Calvin Ridley, made a couple big splashes in free agency as well. And then the Colts, Anthony Richardson, should be coming back healthy. So you're right. I think this is a scenario where, and I don't say this lightly, where you literally could look at the AFC South and say, if they're not the worst division, they could be fighting for the first or second as far as toughest in the AFC when you just look at the young talent throughout all the teams in the AFC South. And I know the Houston Texans will be favorites, as they should be, because they won last year and they, you know, bring back a lot of people that have made some big time free agency signings and trades as well. But I think Jacksonville is intriguing. I think Tennessee is intriguing. And even with Anthony Richardson, we saw Shane Steichen have them one game away from the playoffs when nobody expected that. So the AFC South, it's not going to be a cakewalk like people are used to seeing it be and what it's been for the last few years, you better strap it up when you play the AFC South.
Crazy transformation in the division. Jay Dusable, 10 years in the National Football League, including part of that time right here in Jacksonville. Well, Jay, really enjoyed the conversation. I know you're very busy. Thank you, man, and we'll do it again real soon.
Thanks again, Ryan.
And thank you to former Jaguar defensive lineman LeJay Dusable for joining us here on Hacker After Dark. Of course, you can hear LeJay, Sirius XM NFL Radio. You also see him there at CBS Sports HQ. Nice little career for himself, obviously, in the National Football League. Played with a lot of teams, but 10 years in the league speaks for itself, including a stop right here in Jacksonville. So appreciate LeJay's time here this evening. We're going to bring you a lot of different opinions all week long on the draft coming up on Thursday night. Again, we will not be on draft night. We're going to have the special Jaguar draft show here on 1010XL on Thursday evening. But myself, along with the head coach Dave Campo, we will be on Friday evening during rounds two and round three of the NFL draft. So it's instant reaction to pick 48 in round two, also pick 96 in round number three, as it is a busy, busy week here in the city of Jacksonville and all over the National Football League. Felt like the draft got here really quick, right? I mean, it doesn't seem like that long ago we were at the scouting combine in Indianapolis. Now here we are with the NFL draft, less than 72 hours. The Jaguars, of course, pick number 17 in round number one, 8 picks in total as it stands right now for the Jaguars. They have 1 pick in round one, 1 pick in round two, 1 pick in round three, and 2 picks in round number four, and then a pick each in rounds 5, 6, and 7 for a total of 8 selections as we stand pat here on this Monday evening. Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a very busy Monday night, and it will be a very busy week here on Hacker After Dark. We certainly appreciate you guys for hanging out with us here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. We have a ton of people to thank this evening. Again, former Jaguar defensive lineman LeJay Dusable. Always appreciate his time stopping by, talking Jags offseason, previewing the draft, and more. Thank you to Brian Sexton of Jaguars.com. Brian joined us tonight to preview the draft, to give his thoughts on what the Jaguars should do in round number one. Brian will be heading to Detroit tomorrow with the folks at Jaguars.com, and we will have him back on Wednesday to set the scene for us live from Detroit here on Hacker After Dark. So appreciate Brian joining us not only tonight, but again rejoining us on Wednesday as he will be up in the Motor City getting ready for the NFL draft. And back in hour number one, Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network. I think he's one of the best in the business at previewing the draft. Really enjoyed the conversation with Ian about defensive backs, wide receivers, offensive tackles, and all points in between when it comes to the Jaguars and the 17th pick in round number one. As I've said for a while now, those are the three positions in whatever order you want to put them in. Corner, wide receiver, offensive tackle. To me, that's where they're going, with one big caveat. And I don't know if this is their caveat, but it's certainly my caveat. If a talent like Jared Verse on the defensive line were to fall into your lap at 17, I understand that may not be the biggest need on this Jaguar roster, but if you give me the idea of Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, Eric Armstead, and Jared Verse on that defensive line, I'm absolutely sprinting to the podium. I would do that in a heartbeat. In fact, I did my final Monday mock draft earlier this morning that I put out on social media, and sure enough, Jared Verse fell right into my lap at pick 17, and I took Ricky Pearsall out of Florida with pick 48. If you tell me those are the first two picks for the Jaguars, Jared Verse and Ricky Pearsall, I would certainly take that. So we will see where the chips fall coming up beginning Thursday night up in Detroit. We will be back tomorrow night on a Tuesday, and we will do it all over again right here on Hacker After Dark. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Monday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Monday evening, and we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Tuesday, beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.